Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Action Giants. I'm Tomorrow Ricky on the board. S&P Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures down 73. That would be the June Futures. We have both of them up here, but the Marches settle in the opening, so we should be looking at the Junes. There you go. Those would be the... Those are the SPIMs, I think. The SPMs. Yeah, so there you go. Doesn't sound as good as a spooze, does it, Ricky?
He does not, no, Chief.
No, that's why they were spooze, no matter what month they were. Spooze are technically the Septembers. So there you go. And the Decembers are the Spizzes. I think the Junes are the Spims, and I don't know what the Marches are, L's, whatever the hell they are. Do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
Is there a SPY? Is there an SPY?
Well, the SPY is the ETF.
It's the ETF, okay.
The S&P futures, it's the S&P, then it's the month. There's only... I know.
I never knew what the U was and until you informed me. So, I was just curious as to what the... you were struggling over the next month. I said, was it Y? No.
Okay. No, it gets to the end of the year, and I'm not sure exactly what the March is. It doesn't go A, B, C, D like you would think it would. It doesn't. Otherwise, June would not be M, right?
Whatever it stands for, it doesn't stand for what you think it stands
no,
for.
No, it's a blast from the past, shall we say. Hey, I have a question regarding our Cubs. Looks to me, even though I didn't watch the two games at 5 in the morning, how is this team any different than last year? What am I missing?
Well, how do you know after two games?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the... Somehow or another, some idiot, like maybe myself, must have dug into the Cubs enough that whenever I kick my phone on, I immediately got a Cub article from some moron from Bleacher Nation or someplace like that. And they've been extolling these moves all year. So finally, a piece of paper, I look at the lineup this year versus last year, and I go, okay, well, they got this new outfielder who's pretty good. And they got rid of Cody Bellinger, who's pretty good. Now, here's a team that needs, in my mind, they need 20 hits a week out of someplace. Because they just don't hit enough. And they didn't all last year. That's why they lose so many games 3-1, 4-2, that kind of thing. So, okay, this guy maybe is going to get you, maybe, a couple ahead of Bellinger. And now the third baseman who they brought in last year, they stole the guy. Big power hitter and plays a pretty decent third base. They get rid of him for, I don't know if they got anything for him or not.
He was part of the deal that got him the outfielder.
Okay. So now they've got a rookie playing at third base that has some promise. So I'm sitting there going, where exactly am I getting my 20 hits in this massive offseason where they did all this incredible stuff? What am I missing?
Well, I don't know that they did incredible stuff. I think they probably upgraded a little bit. So if you're looking for the 20 hits, where do you think you can get them?
I think you can get some out of center field.
You can get some out of center field. You can get some out of right field now.
Well, do you think he's better than Bellinger? I don't. Maybe a little bit.
Oh, yeah, you go back look at his career history. He's way better than Bellinger.
Well, Bellinger was almost MVP 2 years ago, and he was MVP once.
Yeah, Bellinger's a good ball player. So where else do you think you can get him?
Well, I don't know, because I have one of the guys that writes this article the other day, and I know everybody's, it's all stats, and I know you're going to tell me I'm an idiot because I don't go into the stats. This guy's saying,
that's not why I would say that.
What is wrong with Craig Counsell and his batting order? Evidently, in one of the games in Dodgers or the in Tokyo against the Dodgers, he's got the new third baseman batting ahead of the outfielder that everybody thinks is all world. And he goes, what is the matter with this guy? I mean, there's a logic here, Kevin, that I just don't get. I mean, when I was coaching softball for 40 years, for those that don't know, Kevin was a hell of a hitter. There'd be no way on earth that I would have you in a spot where you were only going to bat three times instead of four and let some other guy bat four. That is so illogical to me. I can't even spit. I mean, why would you ever do that? They have your best hitter, and it's behind a rookie. Just saying.
No, I guess you get the rookie some better pitches, but other than that, I would say too early to tell on that. And they did get a good veteran. So you know, not a veteran who's going to play 150 games, but a good veteran infielder who can play that position. So if it winds up being a 100 to 60 game split, they could upgrade a little bit there. Not the point. Where can you reasonably get him? You said center field. Can you get
catcher?
More
maybe
out of
you can get some out of the catcher if he has a whole year like he did last year.
Out of the catcher if he in any way resembles the second half guy from last year, and you should be able to get more out of the shortstop too.
Yeah, and you might get a couple out of the second baseman if he has more people around him.
Yeah, well, he's injured right now, so
he didn't play out. He didn't play in Tokyo. He went. I know.
No, he didn't even go.
Oh, I thought he went at the last minute. Well, that was the third baseman that went at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, that's a. I just hope they,
I think they upgraded the bullpen a little bit. So
yeah,
and actually the bullpen was pretty good in Tokyo. It was the it was disappointing that Steele didn't pitch very well.
Well, the bullpen last year started the year I think fine, and he's got decimated by injuries. But well, I think they might have known.
No. I think they had 26 blown saves last year, and I think they had at least 20 of them by the All-Star break.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The guy who was supposed to be the closer. It took him like five blown saves to figure out the guy was hurt. And then he was hurt, right? What was his name?
It's possible he wasn't telling anybody.
Well, that's true. He's not even on the roster anymore, is he? Is he even in baseball?
I think he's still recovering from his the surgery he had last year or whatever treatment he had last year.
Because he was not himself when he was giving up those. He gave up like five in a row. It was awful.
Yeah.
And he was a good pitcher. I mean, you know, pitching is. Say it's not a natural arm movement, except for maybe a few people who manage to keep it natural, but very few people do. Anywho, so what? All kinds of stuff. What about the basketball? We had Drake as a winner, and we have McNeese State. Did you watch the?
I had Drake.
Really? Did you watch the Arkansas-Kansas game?
I saw a lot of it. I saw and certainly saw the end of it. Kansas just folded down the end. They went, came back, took the lead, took maybe a 4 or 5 point lead, and then just. Sucked after that. And their center, Hunter Dickinson, was a liability the whole second half.
Yeah, he was terrible.
That guy was better as a sophomore than he ever was after that.
Well, the Arkansas, I mean, as you know, I'm getting a weird feeling about this, the three-point shot. They had a nice lead early, and they must have gone eight in a row three-point shots where they absolutely just settled for him, Kevin. I see people inside trying to get open, and the guy looks at it, and as soon as they don't, he's almost relieved to take the three. They all just want to take the three. I guess it's easier. You don't get hit or something. I don't know.
I look at it like this. A couple of things. One is certainly there are a lot of three-point shots where you look at it and you go, you know, they would have given you that shot in 20 seconds happily. You know, that in the last 5 seconds of the shot clock, they'll be happy to have you taking that shot. Why are you taking it now? And it's not just the distance. It's, you know, it's how it fits into the flow, whether the guy's in catch and shoot, whether, you know, all of those kinds of things. But there's a lot of times when I sit there scratching my head saying, run your offense, man. run your offense, and if you need to settle for that shot, fine. But if you don't need to settle for it, then... You know, why would you take it, you know, with 22 seconds left on the shot clock?
They had one play where this guy makes a – Kansas throws the ball inbounds, right, from after an Arkansas basket. This guy makes a real nice steal, right? He jumps in front of the dude. He's, like, a little bit past the top of the key. There's nothing but three white jerseys still hanging around kind of under the basket ready to run down the floor. What do you think the guy does? He doesn't wait for anybody. He turns around, he's one, and like airballs the thing. I'm going, like that's a benching. That's what I call timeout and bench his ass. what mindset does that? Do you see?
Well, I think you know you're in that 18 to 22 year old age group, and there's a lot of meatheads there.
Well, I remember last week Stacey King going nuts on. The Bulls got a stone cold. Somebody steals the ball. They got a stone cold fast break, you know, and 2-on-1, and which you know you've practiced since grammar school for God's sake, right? One guy on one side, you try and get the guy to commit, and you give it the ball to the other guy. And if he doesn't commit, you just take it yourself. This is very simple. The one guy peels out to the corner, and the other guy wings him the ball in the corner, and he clunks one. Like wait, Stacey King goes. People run that play since they're seven years old. Nobody runs out to the corner for a long shot on a 2-on-1. What are these guys doing? He starts running.
Even when they don't break out to the corner, the thing that drives me nuts is, my daughter will vouch. I think it's the first thing when she started going to basketball games with me. I think it's the first thing she learned that I'll yell about, and that's give it up early to get it back. Yeah. You know, when you have a fast break, you don't. Don't hold the ball, and then you can decide, you know, inside the lane whether you're going to pass it off or drive. Give the ball up just across midcourt, make the defender commit, and then then you can get it back. Or if the defender doesn't commit, then the other person has a path to it. But, God, players are terrible at that.
Well, the Kansas guys, in defense of the center, how many times did they try and give the guy – like a bounce pass in the lane. You know, the first thing you do, if a guy's bigger than the other guy, you throw high. You never give the guy a ball low. That's how people can steal it from a big guy, right?
He hangs out at the three-point line.
Yeah, just lurking around out there. I'll just hang out here. He's
take,
become the
take
new...
three-point shot. Go ahead. You know, go ahead, Hunter Dickinson. I think it's another one where they're happy to give you that shot.
Well, who's the guy in Milwaukee that does that?
You make them once in a while. You know, if you're only a 30% shooter, I don't know what his shooting percentage is. I'd have to go look it up. But if you're only a 30% shooter, okay. If you make one every once in a while, okay, you make one every once in a while. But still, that's almost in a way. If a guy makes one early, it's a good thing because that's going to encourage him to keep doing it.
What a lot of earnings came out in the last couple of days, and some people are worried about some of the government stuff, I guess, slowing down. Federal Express down $17. They had earnings. That's 7%. That's a lot. Straddle was 12. So, again, we have one going 1.5 times straddle. Accenture must have lost a government contract or something. They're down $25. So that was a solid 10%. This morning we have Nike, which we actually did a play in there. And I think it was 73. All numbers came out. The thing is trading 73 was unchanged, which is where our spread is, by the way. And all of a sudden, about 4:30, somebody must have started talking. Ding, 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 ding. Sounded 67. Losing a lot of money on some of these earnings stuff as they're talking about stuff going forward. There's definitely some concern, Kevin, about what the world's going to look like 6 months from now. I don't know if it's some of these stocks might have been too high to start with or too high priced for perfection early, but we're down again today. Yesterday we were up, and then we couldn't hold it. I mean, it's market's still going wobbly here. I don't know what the interest rates are kind of hanging in there, but you know, we got a copper over $5, which usually means that you know some production is picking up. I don't know if it means it this time. What do you make all this? I mean, the Fed seems to be his speech the other day, and you know, you and I talk a lot about, you can talk about a subject and all of a sudden change subjects and people don't even know you're changing subjects. Somebody will ask him a question about, you know, the health of the economy and people, and he'll launch into some routine about how he understands that the price levels are up and blah 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 blah, going back, you know, how many to COVID and all this stuff, and then he'll immediately launch into, but that's okay, inflation's down to 2.7% or whatever. Well, he just changed the subject. And I don't, how many people do you think understand that? Anybody?
I don't.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is you're looking at a population that had this big bulge in inflation. And the price level is at a level where people are having trouble with their daily life. You know, where they can't afford a car, houses are up, God knows what. Any kind of service. I mean, we're talking about stuff that is over the last 5 years, which has been 5 years since the COVID, is up, let's say 35-40%, despite what the CPI tells you. Okay, and now that's the problem. And people are complaining about that, even in the Trump administration. People are complaining about, you listen to somebody being interviewed and they'll say, when's Trump going to do something about inflation? What they really mean is the price level. When is he going to get this back to where it was a year or two ago? Because somehow they think...
Well, he's not.
But somehow they think they were promised that, and we know they weren't. But the fact is, that's what they see as the problem. And then the politicians, whoever they are, the Fed or Trump or Biden, immediately say, what do you mean? We've got this inflation down. We've licked inflation. It's down to allegedly 2%. It's really 2.6. And by the way, if you really look at the numbers, it's probably still 4. But the subject is totally different is what I'm saying. But it's really hard to explain that. One has nothing to do with the other. If he brings the inflation rate down to 1.5 or 1, which would normally be very... you know, pretty damn good, right? It's not going to anywhere near attack this bubble that's never going away. And people talk about the bubble, and they talk about the rate going forward, and it's two totally separate subjects. Or did I not explain it right either?
No, I totally get that, you know, Tom. I don't think that's an issue. I think you're right that a lot of people don't, you know, really grasp that concept, or they think that, you know, somehow we're going to get prices down. There might be individual prices that can come down. You know, eggs have fallen some, so I suppose we say that's good because eggs are kind of in everything. But there's some very micro level stuff that can happen. Fuel can, you know, kind of go up and down. They've got a little push pull going between the industry and Trump right now because they want to get you know, fuel prices below $50, and the industry is saying we don't want it below $50. We won't drill at that, you know, at that level. But it would do wonders, you know, would do wonders for prices in general, especially anything that is, you know, that has shipping surcharges and things like that built into it. But I don't see nobody's going to go lower the prices just because their costs came down. Some will. You know, some will, but you know, once the price level is where it is, walking away from it is just leaving money on the table. And
I do wish one day
don't do that.
I do wish one day we would have a politician from either party that understands at the very basic economics 101, and we haven't had one in kind of a while. The reason why. We're pumping 13.6 million barrels a day, and we're pretty much kicking the Saudis' ass and everybody else, is because oil's $67 a barrel. If it was 40, we wouldn't be doing 13.6 a day. Why don't these guys get that?
No, I totally get, you know, I totally understand that. There's another reason we're pumping a lot of oil, and that's because the demand for energy keeps going up, and we can talk about, you know, diverting it to alternative forms of energy all we want. Right now, the appetite for consumption is continuing to rise, and as long as it continues to rise, it's going to be addressed in the short term, no matter, even if you think that all of the alternative energies are really going to be the way of the future. They right. aren't the way of now.
What I've not looked...
And that's an even if you think it, and I don't.
Well, you know, Wednesday, why don't we... I'll do a little work. I've not looked at gasoline consumption in the U.S., you know, a table of that in a long time. I can't believe it's up very much. I mean, it went down a lot during COVID.
Oh, it's power consumption for all kinds of other things. You know, the amount of, you know, who was it? Microsoft that wanted buying one of the power plants at Three Mile Island.
Yeah, who's the guys that buying the one up in Michigan? Is that a the one by
is that Bridgman that they're buying?
No, we're in one by right by Jan Flynn's place, Coloma.
Palisades.
It's a Coloma, right? It was shut down a couple years ago.
Oh, Coloma is not Coloma. Coloma, you got they're all in Lake Michigan there. So
yeah, so it's one right above.
Coloma's not in Lake Michigan.
All right. Well, what's the place just north of Jan's summer home? That.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm trying to remember the name of the town. Yeah. South Haven or something like that.
It's further north than that. But it's
north of South Haven.
They just closed it down, and they're trying to bring that one back up. I don't know why you close these things down if they, you know, if they're still running. But they do. And, you know, there's none under construction right now. One started up a few months ago. I thought there were a couple under construction. I looked the other day, there's none. And I don't know why they keep talking about this sodium ones that are less... You know, less dangerous, and doesn't anybody ever? We ever gonna put one of these things up or what? Why don't we just put one up and see what it's like? I mean, I don't know.
Let's list the causes, but don't forget to put stupidity as one of the one.
Oh,
of them.
I know it's really. Well, you know, you kind of wonder where we're headed here on some of this stuff economics wise. I really don't. I think we need to address this medical thing. I don't know if you know, I get Carl's. Always talking about it, and I don't really see any major change in any of this stuff, Kevin. I really don't. I mean, I don't even know how you'd even start, and I don't think anybody's even moving in that direction. I don't know what seems to me now, and I hope it's just my view of what I'm seeing in the news, which you never know what the hell that is. It seems to me the solution might be to cover less people. I don't know that that's the solution necessarily, but. I mean, I don't know. There's got to be some sort of a. If you look around, I mean, you know, your area is not the 1% or piece of the world. I'm sure when you go into places, you see people that don't look very healthy. Do you guys have a serious the urgent care centers in your neighborhood? Does everybody go to a hospital? What happens there in your area? You're in a rural area. I mean, here in the city. There are some urgent care centers people go to.
I'm in the booming South Bend area metropolis. Bend, Elkhart.
So, I mean, what is, if somebody...
We have plenty of health care availability, access in our area. Heck, you know, got the whole hospital system that's, you know, in Michigan, Spectrum is there. Not real fond of them, but there's hospitals there. And then... oh my God! There's three significant hospitals: Beacon, St. Joseph, and Elkhart General. You know, right on the Indiana side of the state line. Yeah, there's access to healthcare is not an issue, and they all have urgent care facilities that are open.
You know. Well, I'm going to say out of the 10 people that I interact with, you know, probably the most, I'm going to say 9 of them don't have a doctor that they can call up and say, "It just doesn't feel good. What should I do?" I mean, there are urgent care centers that actually do a pretty good job. The ones, especially in the ones in the burbs, hospital emergency rooms are a disaster. I mean, totally a disaster because people use them as warming centers, for God's sake. It's the access is actually, I think, pretty horrible in the city these days, Kevin. I don't know where people go in the poorer neighborhoods. I guess you go to county or someplace, but it's not what you think it would be. It's just the idea that people don't have a doctor is pretty scary. But, you know.
It's interesting that you raise that because here in a small city, and I'm sitting in my office in South Bend, one of my offices in South Bend.
Well, you've got 10 offices. You're a big shot.
I'm a shot.
Yes.
The access isn't a problem here. Heck, you know, the college has a great relationship with Beacon Health, and they sponsor our nursing program and hire a lot of people that we bring out of the nursing program. So, it's not a bad area in terms of healthcare. I've not heard of anybody who's so bad that they consistently kill people.
Well, the waits for. A lady who listens to the show from Oklahoma once in a while, when we talk about healthcare or something, she'll lob one in, and she has a heart rhythm problem, and I think she's going to the University of Oklahoma or someplace for to see somebody. There aren't many heart rhythm guys, for those that don't know, but God, it was it February and she got her appointment for May. You know, I mean, I hope to hell she's not out of rhythm from June now and May. But one of the dudes trading the trading floor, he's a friend of a friend. Well, everybody knows who I was because I was on the board, but I don't remember half the names of people that I didn't trade in their crowd. So the guy's not feeling so hot, calls his doctor, if he even had a doctor, and he says, well, you probably should need a appointment with a cardiologist. The guy goes, okay, he gives him a couple names, he calls, he gets an appointment for like 3 months out. Well, okay, that's not so good for a heart.
So he's it really is.
So he gets, it's getting worse and worse, so they said, look, just go to one of these urgent care centers. So he goes in there, and the people are nice, which actually I think they are in those places. And the dude goes, they said, we don't know how the hell you're standing, getting an ambulance, we're getting you in a hospital. So he's there like, I don't know how many, not very long, and they open him up through the triple bypass a whole bit. Well, like 3-4 days later, he's actually feeling pretty good. All of a sudden, they come, this is a Northwestern, they come flying in with the cart, and the siren's going off and stuff, and he's like, what are you guys are doing? He says, well, you're flatlining. And he goes, I feel fine. What are you talking about? Just before they put the paddles at him, he starts yelling, just stop, all you people. Machine was broken. They never even asked him how he felt.
The one word I would not want to hear when I am feeling fine is clear.
Yeah. The amount of, I mean, if you, I don't know, I haven't really been lately, but people tell me they go in and first thing they do is they don't get a doctor, they get the physician's assistant, which, you know, is okay. And they pump your symptoms into the computer, and the computer pops out with the prescription.
That's not healthcare. You could, that's where you look and say, I could have done that.
Yeah, I remember a friend Robin, who recent deceased, her brother went to med school here at Michael Reese, like the dear departed Michael Reese, and he used to tell me, their dad was a pediatrician. That's why the kid wanted to become a doctor, I guess, and he goes, a really good general practitioner, first thing you do is when you walk in, he's going to stare right at you. He's going to look at your gait. He's going to look at your color. He's going to look at your eyes. Before you even sit down, he can tell you, A, if you're sick, and B, probably what's wrong with you. You don't even open your mouth. These guys are so good at that. That's what they've done their whole life. I think that's a thing of the past, Kevin. I really do.
Yes. You know, that's what my doctor always does.
Yeah, but you have one, and I have one too, but... now, if you want a doctor, it's all concierge, right? You got to pay to get their phone numbers. You know, most people don't just have a regular old doctor. If you want one, you have to. They have to. It's concierge medicine, right? Are you guys big on that in your area or no?
There are some. There are a few practices. It's not growing as fast as I would have imagined. There are such practices, and I think they're fantastic.
Well, if you're on Medicare, because I've been talking to people about this and I'm kind of harping on it lately, if you're on Medicare, I think the part you pay to government, this is Medicare is allegedly free, right? Well, the part you pay for the doctors is that $200 a month, Kevin? $220, something like that? If you have any sort of umbrella policy F for that, what do they call it? That where you get the part, the F for the G or whatever the different stuff is.
Part C.
Yeah, that's about $250 to $260 a month, and your drugs are $70. So okay, if you're up to $500 a month out of pocket, even though it doesn't seem out of pocket because it's just taken out of your Social Security check. Well, if you lob a concierge doctor on top of that. That's another probably $2,000 a year. So that's another $250 a month. So you're up to $750 a month out of pocket. And if you're on Social Security with nothing else, what's Social Security? $2,200? Well, if you're down to like $14 after you're paying your for your medical stuff and you're not even sick yet. And everybody says, well, Medicare is free. You're siphoning off the government. It's not that free. It's $700 a month, for God's sake.
Well, and free isn't the word I would use to describe it. Covered, maybe, but yeah, not free.
But I mean, that's as bad as when you didn't have it, right? When you were younger. Well, most people get a policy. Well, I don't know. You probably can't get one for $700 a month, can you? as an individual.
If you work at a state educational institution, you do.
Well, I mean, it's. I don't think if you're in, if you're a lady in childbearing years, I don't think it's got to be at least a grand a month, isn't it? I'm guessing, but these numbers are just so high, and I think some of the representatives that are closer to the people, and then there's a lot of representatives that aren't, that have been there so long, I think they get phone calls all day long about this stuff. So it's not like nobody in Washington knows this stuff, Kevin. I think a lot of people do. I don't know what they do with that information, or whether they get to the top of the pecking chain where they should actually open their mouth about it. But somewhere it seems to be lost between the people and the lower scrub. I mean, the House of Representatives is supposed to do that, right? That's why they're getting voted every year. If they're not current, they're supposed to be tossed out, right?
Yeah. Incumbency is a very powerful thing.
Well, it's also people...
Because the approval ratings suck, and we keep reelecting the same people.
Well, the polls that I've... Polls, God, I don't know nothing but rag about the polls, but some of the studies I've seen, Kevin, that have actually delved into this subject is... If you ask people about the members of Congress, you know, they should all be thrown out, they should all be hung, they should all be something, something. But if you ask them about their person, he or she is fine. Because they voted for him.
Well.
The stuff about human psychology that I don't understand, I really don't understand. It's never my guy or my girl. But I saw some of this firsthand when I was on the board of the SIBO, and we had good people, okay, you know, relatively. And but if you have people of enormous ego, which people on boards are, or regular people walking around have a very high opinion of themselves, usually, don't they? I mean, people look in the mirror, I don't know what they think they see, but it's usually not the same as what you and I might see. But if you... You can even talk about your current politician. There's people that voted for Biden, and then maybe halfway through didn't think he was doing a very good job. Same thing, there's people probably voted for Trump and are really appalled at some of the stuff he's doing. But the idea of or somebody to say, look in the mirror and say, I voted for the wrong person, I bleeped up, is so non-human to do. Because, I mean, if you get a guy who you bring somebody in as a CEO, well, the first thing you did probably was never make the decision yourself. You hire some ridiculously expensive search firm, you know, chump, chump, and chump, that have this huge reputation, and they'll interview a bunch of people, and they'll bring in three people. Then you form a committee, and you interview the three people, and you make a recommendation to the board, and you trump this guy up. Not that Trump. You pump this guy up in such a way that he's the second coming of George Washington and Solomon combined, right? And then you get the guy, and maybe he's a piece of crap. for the people in that room to turn around and say, we made the mistake, this guy's out of here, it is incredibly difficult. Because they have to sit there and say, I did this, I screwed up, I voted for this guy. It's not going to happen. I mean, it has to be so egregious. Because then you'll drop back into, well, the devil you got is better than the devil you might get. Or they drop into all these old guy sayings. The fact is, you hired a clunk. But for everybody to look in the mirror and say, I hired Chump, Chump, and Chump, they were idiots because they brought us these three guys. By the way, the guys that were on the committee that interviewed the three guys, they picked the wrong guy. And then I bought the whole load of crap, and I voted for him. And now he's here. And now he stinks. For people of ego to walk that back and say, I'm the one who screwed up, is very difficult to do.
Well, and you know what? Let's if we take that back to last presidential election. You know, how four square were people behind Biden until they saw that debate?
I think a lot of people thought he was sliding.
For a lot of people, I mean, it was clear that he was, you know, to anybody who was objectively observing, it was clear that, you know, he wasn't all there for a long time. Going frankly back, you could start to, you know, really see it during his first campaign. But the, you know, that was an oh my God moment for people, and you saw that with the Democrats as they were ready to support him right till the end, and then, you know, I mean the party, and you know, I'm saying this as an observation about the party, not necessarily me saying Democrats bad, Republicans good. So please don't go there. But the all of a sudden it was, oh my God, this is really bad, and we're going to lose. And the same people, I mean, hell, what's the guy's name? Jake Tapper is writing a book about the cover up. He was part of the cover up.
Oh yeah, well, you have to be, or else you wouldn't know about it, right?
You know, but this is, you know, this is the kind of thing is, and you're getting, and you're seeing the same thing with COVID. You know, the head of the teachers union, the National Teachers Union, Randy Weingarten, is out this week saying, "Oh, I was all about opening schools back in 2020. Globe, you're on video. You know, there's plenty. What's his name? Newsom. Newsom is on his new podcast saying, "Oh, I never said Latinx." Someone goes and gets out the receipts and says, "Oh, well, here you are saying it about 25 times."
I'll never understand Kevin.
Everybody wants to rewrite history because they don't want to admit the mistakes. Well, they're sort of admitting the mistakes in that they're saying, "That's not the way I should have been." But by the same token, they are really, you know, just making it up and hoping nobody notices.
Well, the thing is, Kevin, they don't.
This is not a day and age when people don't have the receipts to counter your arguments.
But don't take this wrong, but people who dig into people they, quote, don't like are always going to, let me start from the beginning here. I'm going to do a George Stigler moment. I think back in the day, unless you had some really good press guy, if you and I are running for president and vice president on a whistle-stop tour, we could probably give people one line of crap in Peoria, and an hour later give people another line of crap in Dixon, and nobody'd ever match the two together, right? Because we're not on TV. Unless some guy is scribbling down and goes, "Wait a minute, that's different than the guy said an hour ago." You're never going to know. You're just going to tell people in front of you what they want to hear. And that's what politicians have been good at for like a really long time. So, and right now, I think you would think that would all change because everything they say is pretty much on tape someplace, right? I mean, how many times have you and I discussed this? Yet it doesn't. And I think they fall back on what they used to say on the trading floor: you can't take a drink out of a fire hydrant. The news crap is coming so fast at people that to the point where nobody remembers anything anybody says. Unless you don't like the person and you start digging back there and find some sort of a conflict, which you probably can find in every one of these people. And you know, Kevin, nobody cares. I mean, nobody gives a crap what Newsom said 4 years ago or Newt Gingrich or whatever the hell. I don't know why they don't. I'm with you on this.
Well, but Newsom gives a crap about it because he wouldn't be correcting the record. He'd just be
I don't think he's correcting the record. I think he's just... he's just saying what people want to hear now. And if somebody puts two and two together, it's 1 out of 100.
It isn't 1 out of 100, though, because it blasts out to millions of people.
Well,
via social media nowadays. There is no hiding this, Tom.
But the amount of people who read the stuff you read. And who was the guy, the incredibly, I won't say wacky, but he was a Mr. Right Wing when we first started the snow. Then I think, I think the guy moved out of the country or something. Every morning I would get 4 or 5 right-wing spins that started with like one guy somewhere, like you would say, it goes viral. And all of a sudden it's content in every right-wing thing, and I'm sure the left has the same thing. And yet, day by day, people just forget. And what percentage of people, even though if you're in that group, you think everybody's reading it, when everybody isn't? You watch CNBC and a stock starts to go down, they'll say, "Gee, it's going down because Kevin was just on TV and said he didn't like it." Wait a minute. How many people are watching CNBC? They think it's everybody. No, it's not. I mean, you're absolutely right. The stuff catches fire and spins around. But the people who like Newsom, which I'm not one of them, they're not going to rate it. They don't care. It's ancient history. It's so bizarre. You're better at this than me. But to me, it's people can contradict themselves all the time. The people who care are going to point it out, and maybe somebody might read it, and 2 days later You're worried about a basketball game. It's flowing so fast, Kevin. The crap. I don't know that you can even pin people to stuff anymore, unless they manage to do it in two debates in a row or something where they really screw up, which they do. I mean, I just think it's kind of different. I don't know enough to argue with you and say it doesn't. Like people don't pay attention to it, but it doesn't seem to be changing their behavior, does it?
I don't know. Because we get back to the popularity. There is inexplicable voting patterns when it comes to popularity versus unpopularity. Newsom is not popular in California.
No.
And yet they keep electing him.
Well, how much?
And maybe that's because he has a feckless opposition party.
Well, that's how much of the Biden people who stuck with Biden, and to a certain extent, people now that are sticking with Trump, the first thing they think of is, oh my God, no matter how bad this gets, it's better than the alternative. I mean, there's people that thought if Biden was twitching in the grave, he was better than Trump. Now, I wasn't one of those people. There's people now that say, when the first thing they think of Trump making an idiot himself in front of a world leader or something, acting like he's eighth grade, the first thing they think of, the other face that pops in there is what's her name, Kamala Harris, and they go, he's still better than her. So this is. I think I'm right on this. I don't want to be, but
there was something really funny I saw last night, where it was the Barack Obama. It's just putting words in his mouth. He didn't say this, but Barack Obama, I want a vice president dumber than I am. Joe Biden, I want a vice president dumber than I am. Kamala Harris, I want a vice president dumber than I am, and shows. Tim Walz looking like Stimpy.
Well, you know what's weird about the whole Biden thing, and you're right about the quote cover. I mean, Wayne, who's been back on the show some, when he was on when Biden was elected, and he went through a list. I mean, Wayne is an amazing source of information. I may not agree with him on what he says, but he's an amazing source of information of people basically you and I forgot about. And when he was talking about dragging essentially Biden off, he didn't say scrap heap, but an older dude to kind of calm things down over what was kind of a tumultuous, actually not just, 4 years, maybe part of Obama's too. One of the names was Conrad Adenauer, and there was a couple other names that he mentioned throughout history, that you put somebody older in there who's stable just to kind of calm things down. And I think he used the term for a while. Which,
not what I think happened, by the way. Yeah, but keep going.
But I'm saying that was his. He's saying that you don't want another young person. You don't want another crazy. Anyway, but then the idea that why didn't enough people in the Democratic Party say, okay, we've got this older guy in there for a while, and we need to get some people up and running behind him, so that if he can't go again, which was seemingly likely even at the time. 4 years is a lot for somebody that age who seems to be having trouble to start with. I mean, there are people that are 90 that are, and I think when Warren Buffett was 90, people would have thought he had all his marbles. I mean, he still does, I think. And some people are like that, and they're very gifted in that regard. They got good genes or whatever. But as he started to wear down, somehow they got locked in this trap. What are we going to do with Kamala Harris?
That was their problem. You're right. When they were selecting, They weren't thinking of succession, and Biden was with to the extent that the decision was his, and that's one that was definitely not his wife's, because she could never stand Kamala Harris. To the extent that the decision was his, it was a very bad decision, and that was his first important decision to make.
Well, but the one that really frosts me, Kevin. I mean, I've kind of left the current iteration of the Democratic Party a while ago. Which leaves me floating in the middle, God knows where. But Mike Quigley came out and said, okay, he's not running. We need to do something right away to make the next person legitimate. We need to have a countrywide primary where people can put their hat in the ring and people can win the nomination. Mike Quigley is a very well thought of guy. Why did that fall on deaf ears? That made so much sense to me. I you don't just anoint somebody nobody liked in the first place.
You know how that unfolded, and again, this appeared to be a Jill Biden engineered thing, is that very quickly, the president endorsed Kamala Harris. President Biden endorsed Kamala Harris, and put her in the forefront and made it damn near impossible for them to undermine her. They had, they had constituencies of women's groups. They had constituencies of, race-oriented groups that were saying, "You are not going to turn around and dump the black woman." They just said, "You're not going to do that." And Biden threw his weight behind it to the extent that it was worthwhile, and just kind of short-circuited the ability to do anything about that. And I think, to a great extent, that was done out of spite, because he's still pissed off that they kicked him out. I think that was just a way to say, okay, fine, if that's the way you want it to go, bring it on. Here we go.
But the logic,
see what you think with the result then.
But the flaw in the logic,
he still will maintain. He still thinks he could have beaten him.
The flaw in the logic there is, it's. Even if she ended up being the winner, she then was the winner. If two or three people threw her hat in a ring and they had a whirlwind countrywide thing for 4 or 5 weeks and she ended up winning, it would have strengthened her. Why didn't they realize that? Rather than being anointed, then she would have had a kick to other people's ass, which would have made people think a lot more. I don't think she would have, but if she did, it would have given her a lot better chance, wouldn't it? That's the flaw in the logic.
She never gave herself a chance.
Well, I'm saying if I don't think she, if two other people would have put their hat in the ring, I don't think she'd have come out on top. But if she did, I think she would have been in a better place instead of this anointing thing. Who cares? There's a lot of guys that get endorsed by the outgoing president that don't win in the primaries, right? What if she go?
Actually, I'm trying to think of one that hasn't. A lot of times, the outgoing president will just say, "I'm going to stay neutral." I'm trying to remember what Clinton did. Did Clinton? Well, of course, Gore won the nomination. So, trying to think of somebody who wasn't the.
I don't think Clinton ever acted against Gore. I think he endorsed Gore. Clinton.
Yeah, he probably did, but Gore was his VP, so. What's the outgoing president going to do? He's going to endorse his VP, probably.
Yeah.
But this wasn't an endorsement as much as it was, hey, it really needs to be her. It was short-circuiting any talk of that.
Yeah, and it made no sense, and look what happened. And to this day, they don't have anybody that's a national...
Well, they don't, and who else were they going to throw up there anyway that was going to make sense? But, let's go back to 4 years ago when you talk about normalcy. I don't think it was an attempt to get normalcy. I think they were that there was a big rally right before the South Carolina primary to get a whole bunch of people to drop out of the race. And I know some people here who were involved in the Buttigieg campaign that know he was promised a cabinet position if he would drop out of the race. And I'm sure they did that with some of the other people, or they had different kinds of promises, because they were scared to death that Sanders was going to win the nomination and that Sanders would lose to Trump.
Well,
that was what it was all about.
All right, see, now that you've gone down this road, you've got to answer the one question that's hanging in the air. Stocks and Jacks for 15 years. Who the hell is they on both sides?
They is the Democratic Party leadership, which in this case would have been the same people that pushed out Biden this time. That's Pelosi. That's what's his name, Schumer. That's their group of people.
I don't think what did Dan Corleone said? He's a pimp. He couldn't have pulled this off. I don't think they're the they, Kevin.
I don't think Schumer could have pulled it off, but I think Pelosi could.
I don't buy that.
And Pelosi with Schumer. Could
there's
have
there's
it
somebody
off.
Above these people that has all the money from somewhere. I mean, when Tom Dart goes out to Washington when he wants to run for mayor, and he comes back to Chicago and says he's not running, and against what's his name, the Jewish guy, guy who was the ambassador of Japan, Rahm Emanuel, and he's, or actually when Emanuel, I don't know when, but Time Dart was told like not to run. Who makes that call? Because they're not giving people. The Democratic Party's messed up compared to the Republicans in a lot of ways. They don't. If they think you're going to win, they don't give you money. If you're running strong, you give them money. Where the Republicans actually support their candidates. It's screwed up. They're not the same. But who? If I go to Washington, I don't think I. If I met with Nancy Pelosi and she told me not to run, I'd say screw you. I don't have any respect for some of those people in the party. I think, you know, somebody obviously has enough clout to say, if you run, we're giving all the money to the other guy, or we're doing something, or I've got 15 donors on the list, and they're asking me who to back, and I'm not going to back you. There's somebody somewhere who's higher than we think that they are. They ought to be, Kevin. I mean, I know. So maybe
Pelosi is the organizer, and she's got to line up her wealthy. The wealthy backers in the party, you know, the Reid Hoffman types that have a ton of money are not necessarily front and center. He's had a little bit higher profile lately as one example. But, yeah, then they got to go line up all the people who are going to be involved and say, okay, we need, you know, where are we going to throw the support? Whatever they did, it was, we got to stop Bernie Sanders. Just like Hillary Clinton had done 4 years before when Sanders started to get some momentum, and you know, and the DNC basically gave, you know, her all the support and none to Sanders. In fact, you know, basically she co-opted the whole process, the whole funding process for the DNC.
The reason why, and if I can find it, Kevin, I guess I got to scan it and send it to you, because it was in the. Making of the President, the guy started that. Who the hell was the guy that was it? Theodore White? 1960? I don't know if anybody's old enough to remember this stuff. Every election, they would put Making of the President 1964 or 68. And the deal is that they would put somebody, a reporter, in each side's campaign. And they would be in any meeting they wanted to be in, but they could not publish one word of it after the election. And I think Russell's daughter might have done something like that as an intern for somebody who did that for the last election. I never asked him because none of my business, but I think she was doing something like that where she couldn't talk about that stuff and never did. So I don't know. But when it got to the Bush years, and I don't think this was ever published, because this is what happened. The manuscript got published after the election, but before somebody was declared the winner. I think people got pissed off about that. Anyway, the deep-seated Republicans, you know, the Cabots and the Lodges, the people who thought of the old neocon group that was really controlled the Republican Party, even though other people think they control it. When Clinton was in office, they couldn't stand Clinton, right? All the crap he was doing. So they had the big meeting, and they essentially interviewed people for who they were going to support for president. And the guy who chaired the meeting was either George Shultz or Arthur Burns, one of the two. I think it was Shultz. The real old-line Republican guys that were, a lot of them were Reagan people. They were all the people who would go to that club in California, the deep-seated Republican club up in the Redwood Forest once mm-hmm. a year. It was all those guys. And they were all in this interview, and they selected Bush. And they said, okay, if we can keep his shenanigans before when he was 40 or 45 or whatever, you know, the booze and all the other stuff, because he no longer was a drinker, and that we can keep his Vietnam record behind him, because he was, you know, he didn't do crap, it didn't go, he was in the National Guard, never showed up for flights or all that kind of crap, but he was a likable guy, and oh, by the way, he owned a baseball team, which is big plus for just about everybody, and he had won governor in Texas a couple times, which is not easy to do. So I mean, it wasn't like he was a crummy campaigner or anything. So they essentially selected him. It wasn't the people in Congress you and I might have known. You know, it was not the Speaker of the House. I don't think he was even at the meeting. But this, you know, this is a long time ago. I'm not saying that now that's what's happening in the Democratic Party, but it's not like it hasn't happened before. And they raised, according to this article, something like $30 or $35 million for Bush before he even started running, which in those days was like a lot of dough. Now you get that check from one big company if you wanted it. And when Bush went to Iowa, or New Hampshire, whatever the hell it was, and he gets his ass kicked by McCain. And these guys are outraged. How the hell could our guy lose to this guy? Would we got $35 million behind him, beside with all our support? And that's when the Carolina, they used to call it Super Tuesday. I don't think they do that anymore. They go to Carolina, and all of a sudden, the internet had kind of just started. All the stuff starts getting leaked about McCain's wife cheating on him when he was a prisoner of war, and who she was screwing, and all this stuff. And then McCain, the reason why he survived it is because he was giving the enemy secrets. All this stuff starts to leak from these guys, or some. You know, if he walked up to Schultz, if he was still alive, he'd say he didn't do it. But and all of a sudden, Bush wins in Carolina by a long way, and that's why at the convention, John McCain refused to shake his hand because he thought he was behind it, which I don't think he was. But it got out there and it buried McCain. So it's not like, I mean, for you and I to think that, you know, Pelosi and Schumer are the top of this pyramid. I don't think they are, because of what I read in that. Now, maybe the Democrats are so disorganized, they actually are. That could be too, right? I don't know.
That could be too, but it could just as easily be a function of it's a joint venture at the very least. I mean, it really has to be. Who's calling the shots? Who's granting permissions? All of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think that's an interesting topic, and we can talk about that. But ultimately, who's got to engineer it? Who does the machinations? And I think Pelosi is really good at what she does. It's just, you know, she's so despicable.
but this article never mentioned the Republican National Committee. They were totally out of the process. These guys told them what to do because they had the money.
Yeah, no doubts.
No, what I'm saying, I have no idea who those people would be on the Democratic side. Do you? I mean, there's got to be. I mean, you still got a lot of the old neocons and stuff running around the Republican Party, although I don't think they're Trump.
So what's the interesting question then? And I'm going to leave you with it because I have to go. And I will put you in Carl's able hands. But the interesting question is, what's the relationship between Trump and that group?
I was just going to say that. I got to believe that's testy at best.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. And we'll see how the next couple of years unfold. He is clearly operating on I have 2 years and probably not that much, because something better be going well in the second year. Otherwise, we're going to lose Congress. And if he loses Congress, then he can't do anything.
Well, he has to be a little more careful, I think. This is whether you like him or don't like him.
Yeah, Donald Trump being careful, probably not happening.
I'm saying he has to be a little more careful to not make it impossible for people in some Republican districts to win their... He's only got, what, 3 seats in the House? I mean...
And he's got some really sensible people in cabinet positions, so, he needs to let them be a little more front and center.
I don't disagree. But I'm saying...
Scott Bessent talk a little bit more. He's a very calming influence, and yet he's totally on board with the agenda.
But if you're... I don't know how in touch he is with the people. I don't know. I don't know the guy. So I'm not. Everybody else wants to speak for people. I try not to, because I don't know the person. If you start, having the people wait for their appointments at the veterans' home, and I'm not sure that's happening. If you mess with Social Security or anything like that, or even with Medicaid, now you could make the determination that most people on Medicaid don't vote Republican. I don't know that you definitely want to go there, but you maybe could make that determination. If you have 15 people that get drummed out of office because they're in a district that maybe is on the borderline, or maybe even was Republican, and say, we can't handle this, we're losing everything we thought we had, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, all of a sudden it's a different world. I don't know what right now he's doing stuff that people maybe think is a stretch of executive authority, but the Congress right now is going to let them get away with it. What if they don't? What kind of a mess that's going to be, Kevin? What if every time he says something, they flap and say, no, you can't cut that. By the way, we voted for it, and by the way, you signed it. what if that happens every day? What a mess we're going to be in with that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of litigation ahead, and really, you know, look at it from the opposition standpoint. Their mission is, just like I said, he's got 2 years to, and in the second year, things better be looking better, and the opposition is saying, let's stall it. Let's run clock on him. And so it's going to be an interesting, you know, just to stand back and be an observer, it's going to be an interesting and educational time.
Well, I mean, you go back to it, I'm not saying, you know, some Democrat didn't do this too, but McConnell was pretty much on record the minute Obama got in there. Now, Obama seemed like a decent enough guy on TV. Maybe he isn't. Maybe he's a horse's ass behind it. I don't know. I don't know him. But McConnell was pretty much on record that he wanted to screw the guy's presidency. I don't know why that. Why were
what was he really saying, Tom?
I don't know him either. You know, I don't know him. You know, maybe it was the fact that
just like if you totally disagree with Trump's agenda, then you don't want him to succeed, and you're going to try and block what he's doing.
Obama didn't have an agenda.
If you don't like Obama's agenda, you're going to try and block what he's doing, however you can.
What was
if you just patently disagree, and the thing is that the thing that we just don't do and haven't done for a long time in this country is find common ground on anything and say let's work on that stuff.
I don't recall Obama having much of an agenda of anything. He didn't do anything when he was in there, except the Obamacare, which. Somebody had to do something.
No. I mean, there was a lot of educational initiatives, a whole lot through the Department of Labor on regulations. It was a consequential presidency, not in a way that I think was good, but it was a very consequential presidency.
I think his biggest mistake was jamming Obamacare through, not bipartisan.
All you did was set
yourself up for sniping.
Carl just put in the chat, how about student loan reform?
Well, I mean, the student loan reform, it took universities and took people to a place nobody wanted to go. And then all of a sudden you're there. Nobody ever dreamed that when you start out with student loans, when you and I were in school, that somebody would have $250,000 in loans. Nobody ever thought that it would be the people came out of Notre Dame that had loans in our time. What was the loan, Kevin? $3,000?
It's something like that. Hey, I really have
all
to
right,
go.
Right. So
I'm throwing it to Carl, and Carl can debate.
Oh, hey, wait a minute. If you're going to tell us after the fact how you called all the upsets, tell us today. What are the upsets today?
Let me see. Where's my bracket here? Let's see. Because I had Drake yesterday, but I did not have McNeese. Let's say here.
So you've only got one clunk so far.
10 seconds here. Give me about 10 seconds here. Here's my mobile tickets. Let's go here and go bracket. And welcome to CBS Sports. And play now. And look at the bracket. The ones that I have. That haven't played yet
In front of our eyes, you're turning into a politician. Now, if I were to listen to you,
yeah, no, I haven't. It's,
no, I mean, if I were to listen to you, I would assume, and you know, never assume. You can ask that of me and you. I would assume that you're really telling people that you've only got one game yesterday that you missed.
No, you know what the one that killed my bracket was Kansas, because I had Kansas winning 3 games.
All right, how do you pick between Bill Self and Calipari? That's a tough one.
Oh, they're just a lovable bunch.
Unbelievable.
Let me see. Do I slight upside? I have 9 Baylor beating 8 Mississippi State. I have just looking at upsets. I don't know that I have any other upsets on that side of the bracket. On this side,
had you seen Drake play? I never have.
Well, I had, but that wasn't my decision criterion. My decision making was all about the they do these quad one, quad two types of things. Oh, yeah. You know, what's their record against the good teams and so on. So I went totally by, you know, who had the better record against quad ones and quad twos. You know, so Joel was talking about, you know, Michigan getting screwed, and they did rally and win the Big Ten, but their record against quad one teams was 3-12, but their record against quad twos was 1-8.
They almost lost.
Michigan, I had Michigan winning yesterday, but I don't have them winning again.
They barely won yesterday.
Yeah, they barely won yesterday. And the reason I did it that way is that as you look at that quad 1-2 record, that's how did they do against good teams?
Well, hey, why don't we do this? If we got Carl on Monday morning, Bill Moriarty, who's almost as crazy about basketball as you are, is going to call in. We might talk about some infrastructure for a few minutes. Before, John, why don't you call with him? You guys will watch more of it than me, and we'll do an NCAA thing Monday morning.
Yeah, but if you want the sheet of integrity, I can send you the sheet. Okay, I got to go.
All right.
I got to go. I got to be on. I got to make coffee and then be on another meeting in 5 minutes. So I'm out.
Carl, are you going to say we're going to see some whiteout on that sheet of Kevin's?
Oh, you know, you have to look. Well, nowadays, you don't do it. You don't do it with whiteout, right? Because you put the sheet in like Excel or so. It used to be, when you actually wrote it down on a piece of paper, use a typewriter or whatever, that the evidence was there, right, that somebody altered it.
Yeah, we don't want no stinking evidence.
No, we don't want no evidence. Now we just go in the computer and we change it. Oh, no, that was never that. That was what it always was.
Yeah, forget about that. those delete key strikes for you.
Well, and you know, the fun part, it's actually rather amusing. Yesterday, so as I've pointed out, and I wrote an article about this back in the fall, that you know, everybody that's been cheering about Elon's little invention with Starlink, which isn't his invention, it happens to be something that's piggybacking on the actual work that his group has done, which is the ability to get stuff into Earth orbit, low Earth orbit, at a lower cost. Okay, and that's what's made all this. That's what's made a lot of things that he's done that actually.
Carl, meant sorry to interrupt. Wasn't Telstar low Earth orbit as well?
No. So all the original communication satellites were geosynchronous.
Okay, everyone.
All of them, and the reason they're geosynchronous is because we had all kinds of issues prior to the modern era. With how do you get the signal focused on the bird in the sky, okay, which is really important because the other guys that are up there that are your competitors or maybe even your other satellites, if you splatter them with your transmission, you destroy their connectivity. All right, so the beam has to be very accurately aimed and focused. And this is the reason that Hughes supposedly won't let you do your own self-install. Now, in truth, you can, but they get very, very squirrely with you. And this, I used to work in this industry, okay? This was where some of my first commercial experience writing code was in that part of, I mean, that industry was satellite earth station communications. Mostly for cable, it was used mostly for cable television and also, though, banking and other interests. You know, the ITT building in Broad Street wanted to be able to have communications with other places in England. Okay, well, the undersea cables were very expensive when they were copper to use, and so you shot it up in the sky because that was the other option, right? But the thing about it is that it was extremely expensive, and then on top of that, you had to have this huge dish array in amplifier set and everything else on the ground because you had to focus your beam at exactly the right place. And you can't be scattershot about this. The antenna quality has to be very high. So there's a lot of, I mean, I could spend like, you know, 2 or 3 hours going over exactly what the requirements were for this kind of stuff. And I understood them very well because I was in the middle of writing code to, you know, that did this. But what has happened And this actually, the technology for this came out of the military. So, you know, Elon, of course, you know, wants to take credit for being the super genius. You know, Wile E. Coyote, super genius, right?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
You know, not so much. But, you know, give credit where it's due because there is something to it, right? It's not totally stupid. But now we have phased array transmitters. So basically you have a flat panel and the software directs exactly where the signal goes. But that also means that because that is the case, it can change it without you physically having to move the transmitter, the antenna, all right? So I can point the beam over a fairly wide part of the sky, horizontally and vertically, without actually having to move the antenna itself. All right, now that used to be impossible. You wanted to change the satellite that you were going to transmit to, you physically moved the antenna. And when the antenna is 30 feet in diameter, there's a lot of mechanical and big motors and everything else. You know, the structure to do this is pretty impressive. And pretty dangerous if it gets out of control too, just because of the mass of what you're swinging around and the amount of power involved. But all of those satellites were geostationary because we did not have the ground technology to do anything different. Now we do, and so you know there you are. But that is the thing about this is that. This is all cross-pollination to a large degree, right? And that the technology came out of the military, you know, synthetic aperture radar and things like this, and you know, in planes and that sort of stuff, and you know, it gets adapted into civilian use.
For those that never had the pleasure of dealing with some of this stuff, my buddy Dr. J, when he first moves into the building that I live in, he. On the roof, and I was living in another place, and he says, hey, I'm going to town this week. I just gotten this puppy, right? And I love dogs. And he goes, if you want to hang here for the weekend, you got the big satellite. He put one of those big honking satellite things up
that
the big nets. It was like a big net, but it moved. You had to move the damn thing and acquire the various satellites. So I go, sure. He goes, yeah, you can watch the Cubs, watch all the sports and all the stuff, and I'm thinking, that's kind of neat. So I head over, there's about three remote controls. I don't know where the hell I got lost, but I couldn't get anything. There was no, you knew what channel something was on, but you had no idea which satellite that channel was coming from. Finally, I said, the hell with it, and went down to the bar and watched the game. You had to go get? Was it three or four you had to line the thing up for?
Well, you had, so you had the azimuth, and the declination, okay? So you had the X and the Y, so to speak. But then on top of that, the way the transmitters work is they also have polarization. So there's a horizontal, it's called horizontal and vertical, although it really kind of isn't, because that's like in reference to what, right?
Yeah.
So there was a rotational element to the signal that you were looking for as well. And all three of those had to be right. Now receiving, back in the old days, what you were basically picking off was the network feed that was coming across the satellite. And in the old days, this was not encrypted because they didn't bother, right? Nobody has that stuff. Well, guess what? Some people did, right? And they were none the wiser that you were doing it. There was nothing they could do about it because you're only listening. You're not transmitting.
Well, hauling this thing up and down to the roof and the size of the TV, I don't know how they ever got the TV up there because we had to break it apart to get it down.
Right, I mean, this was, you know, but this was the gig. Every now and then, when you're driving, you know, back in rural areas, you'll still see. I mean, it's not connected to anything anymore. But it's one of these dishes. This thing is someone's backyard.
Yeah, and
they're big. Yeah,
oh, yeah. And so, if you train it on a satellite now, you don't get anything, right? It's all encrypted.
Well, for the most part, yes. Now the network feeds. The general network feeds, like, you know, PBS or whatever, when I lived down in Florida, and I used to do hits, live hits for back before I got blackballed on all the major networks, the PBS station had a studio and an uplink, so they had a transmitter, right? Because, you know, they were the PBS station in the local area, right? So they had to have some way to get into the national circulation of things. I do not know if those signals today are encrypted or not. I saw their back room stuff, their equipment. I recognized all of it immediately. I mean, it's just newer generation of the stuff that I used to write code for. But, and it's a lot smaller and uses a lot less
power.
Why is
the delay so much longer?
Because that's the amount of time that's...
But it's grown, right? For those...
No, Chief...
For those who maybe, say you throw the Bears on, and you don't want to listen to the two knuckleheads on national TV. They might be good, they might not be, you might not like them. And you might want to listen to, Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer. Okay, so you might think that you could just put your radio on and listen to the game. Well, if you have a regular antenna, which most people don't, you can actually do that because both of them get to you at the same time.
However, if you try to split it, it doesn't work.
Well, if you go over cable, your cable, they probably still sell them, Carl. There was a radio you could buy that had up to 8 seconds delay on it.
Right.
So you turn the radio on, and of course the radio's telling you the play's already over and the TV hasn't even started yet. So you could take this little slider and link them both up.
Right.
But I have to
do that now if I do if I do live podcasts and I'm going up to like Rumble, for example.
Okay.
I have to have my software offset the audio and the video. Because otherwise, when I speak, my lips are not moving in synchronization with what you hear.
Okay, well, yeah, that would make sense. Well, now I think I have this buried in some drawer somewhere. I'll find it someday if I ever clean up. I don't think 8 seconds is good enough. I think you need like 10 or 12.
There's a bunch of things that have changed there. Some of that is that the networks insert an intentional delay unless someone uses the F word. Okay.
Well, radios do that.
Well, so does television. Okay. So that's part of it.
I think all the stuff coming off your people on TV, because if somebody uses the F word from the audience, if there's nobody there, it comes through.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, here at Stocks and Jacks, we actually have, because we have been on the radio from time to time, we actually have a machine that has a dump button. So
right.
Nobody cares what people say on podcasts, but if somebody were to lob one out there and the...
You can't, you'll get fined.
There's four words you can't use at all. If you say, SHIT before 6 o'clock, you're okay, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I can use the word ass because might be a donkey.
Yeah, but you can't.
Right.
You can't use the C word. You can't use the C word, the F word, the N word.
Right.
I mean, there's like four words you can't use, but at any time. But then there's some you can use. You can say somebody's a son of a bitch before 6 in the morning or something
right.
like that. But we have an 8 second dump. So
right.
so Ricky's got 8 seconds to react,
and hit the button.
The reason why you do that is if you have people calling in, you have to have it. Where if your people are professional enough, like your guys doing the Bears game, you assume that they're going to stay away from using the F word. But we actually, when we were on the score, we didn't have our producer in house. The producer was at the score.
Yeah.
So we had this guy call in, and he went, and so what the hell's our producer's name? I'll think of it. He says this guy wants to talk about S&P futures.
Right.
Okay, so. He says, and you can tell something was weird because he was talking real fast. He goes, "Yeah, I want to talk about S&P Fusion, but first of all, I want to talk about ends and Jews."
Oh!
The guy's name was Cyrus. So John's sitting there going, "Cyrus hit the dump." Cyrus, and Cyrus must have gone to the men's room or something. But you know what the weird part is? He was talking so fast, he ran out of breath. He stopped himself.
Yeah, well, it's, this is, but anyway, today we have, the world has changed to a large degree. And it really is really is different because now most of your feeds are terrestrial. But there, in fact, that was one of the things that was kind of interesting about doing live hits back in the time of the crash was, I'd drive over to Pensacola and I'd sit in their studio and do it. And because they knew that I had been involved in the industry before and that I'd been doing live hits all the way back to when I was running my internet company up in Chicago. And in fact, it was Chicago Tonight was the show that I was most frequently on. when I was up there, which was kind of interesting. They, I would ask them for certain things, like the back feed on the video, that none of the people that showed up for live hits there wanted. And they'd look at me like I had six heads. And I'm like, no, I want it on the screen in front of, you know, because when you're doing with a traditional television camera, there's actually a screen, which if you've got a teleprompter running, is where the words are that you're speaking. Okay, so the bubblehead that's doing the weather report, they're not actually, that's not coming out of their mouth. They're reading it, all right? And that's where that is. But in addition to that, you wouldn't think that you could point a camera at somebody and yet that person staring at the camera could actually see the image of what's going on, but they can, and it doesn't interfere with the picture because it's rather complex. You can
unless you can't. I mean, I'll give this quick story and we'll go to break, but we'll talk about the markets and stuff. But
I used to go on
CNBC once in a while. They'd invite me.
Oh yeah, I was on there a few times.
Well, so I get on there, and the place here in Chicago is like this little studio. There's no monitor. See, you don't even know who's asking you the question unless...
Oh, that sucks. No, see, I wanted the back feed because I wanted that six box up where I could see it.
Well, unless you knew the person's voice, like if you listened to it enough, you wouldn't know who the person was. You wouldn't know if it was... Who's the guy with the red hair? They always tell him it's a wig and it's not in the morning. Joe Kernan?
I mean,
if you didn't know Joe's voice, you'd think it was the other... I mean, so... And plus, there's no obvious spot where the camera was. So you didn't really know where to look. The guy said the camera's up and back, like below above that thing. But you didn't exactly know where.
That's a screwed up studio setup.
Two things. I'm in there, and of course Audrey calls me immediately after. What the hell? You look like Tricky Dick Nixon. Your eyes are darting around. I go, all right, I didn't know where the camera was.
Yeah, where the hell am I supposed to be looking?
Where am I supposed to be looking? And then I was supposed to be on there for Walmart earnings, which I don't give a crap about. I mean, I do for my people at Walmart, but... By and large, I'm not a Walmart analyst. So then it happened to be the days, how long ago it was, that Warren Buffett had bought the Burlington Industries.
Oh, that was when Burlington got bought, yeah.
And so Joe Kernan says something to the effect, well, Tom, what do you think of this merger? And I said, well, Joe, you know, you kind of hit a hot button for me. I come from the railroad industry. Right. I said, the Burlington Northern is a combination of Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, Northern Pacific and the Great Northern and somebody else. And he, of course, wanted no part of this detail. And I said, you know, they just got oil up there, and this is essentially a monopoly for the top part of the country. And
yeah, which I'm sure they love that.
And I said, you know, Warren Buffett's not a dummy. He just bought a monopoly in this area when they're going to start shipping all this oil. They couldn't get me off fast enough.
Oh, no. They.
But, well, I mean, that is the answer, right?
Oh, it is the answer, but they don't want you to say something like that. But, you know, yeah. So,
I mean, but anywho, but we come back. We've got your views on the market.
We're in a really interesting place right now, Chief. So yeah, I want to
tell you what the buy the dippers have been getting spanked. No, but they're resolute because it's been like, you know, it's been doing this for 15 years. So
I think you got to be, well, like I said, I mean, I know you got to take a break because you ain't got to pay some bills.
But, S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 81. These are the June S&Ps now. The marches are going to come off the board as soon as we're done with the show. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side. Protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Blown Open Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures down 87. Again, this is yesterday when we were up, down, up, down. We ended up down 12 in the S&Ps, 59 in the NASDAQ. This is after being up really twice, pretty strong, and we still can't seem to hold it. It seems like there's an offer among the market's a little heavy, as we used to say on the trading floor. We'll talk about Carl about why that might be. The DAX down 149. These guys were down yesterday as well. 0.6%. FTSE down 37.4. CAC around down 47.6. So moderately bearish over there. Not horrible, but moderately bearish. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 74. But this is a big one here. Hang Seng down 530. That's over 2%, 2.2%. Shanghai down 44, 1.3%. This is maybe 4 or 5 days after business days. The Chinese government came out and said they're going to do everything to prop the market up. Well, they're not doing a very good job. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.21. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.75. Japan unchanged, 1.52. Oil, which we've been talking about, it's stuck here at 67, 95. It went up to 74. It looked like a breakout. Matter of fact, one day I said, gee, it looks like a breakout. Oops. Back down here to 67, 95. Careful calling those breakouts. Brent down 27 cents, 71.73. Natural gas down 4 cents, under $4, 3.92. RBOB down a penny, 2.17. We've got gold, which has been on a serious tear. It's coming back $2 today, 3,041. Silver down 26 cents, 33.72. Copper down 4 cents, 5.06. Foreign exchange, U.S. dollar is actually getting stronger. The pound is down to 108.4. It was over 109 for a while. I'm sorry, the euro. British pound down a little as well to 129.3. I think I would talk to Carl about that, about these swings in these currencies. Matter of fact, Japan is up to down to 148. Again, the Japan is the other one. The 108 means that's what the euro is worth in terms of dollars. It's worth $1.08. Japan, on the other hand, when it says 148, you divide that into the dollar, so it's the other way around. So you got to be careful with that. Crypto. Down $66, quiet, 84,126 on the Bitcoin. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. The Bulls won again.
Morning, Chief. That's right. The Bulls won again, which is great news. It's 7:32 a.m. here in Chicago. 33 degrees right now with a high of 57. Windy and warmer with some sunshine giving way to clouds. Tonight will be mostly cloudy and breezy with a couple of showers of rain or snow with low 33. The wintercast also states that there might be a 2-hour snowfall late tonight, so you better prepare for that. Phoenix, Arizona, 55 degrees right now with a high of 84. Sunny day today. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 55. Very nice weather out in Phoenix. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 25 minutes. We're looking at 41 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 37 minutes. Iman Den Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. Lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Den Ryan, 36 minutes. Let's talk about sports. Bulls beat Kings, 128-116. And today we have Cavaliers at Suns at 9 p.m. NHL Blackhawks lose to Kings 3-1, sadly. White Sox beat Angels, though, 2-1. Diamondbacks beat Athletics, 11-3. And today we got White Sox playing against the Reds at 3:05 p.m. Cubs against Padres at 3:05 p.m. as well. Lastly, Diamondbacks against Brewers at 8:10 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Carl, we've got just a mass of information hitting the market on all sides tonight. Obviously, the reason why I love doing the show is I end up with information, I think, from the people on the show and from people who write in that not very many investment advisors have. And I think it really helps me with my stuff for people, but also can be, like I said earlier, it's like taking a drink through a fire hydrant. There's so much information, it's hard to decide whether you want to buy or sell or what you want to do. It seems like individual stocks and their earnings now this last couple of weeks, most of them are to the downside.
Right.
And were, you know, uncertainty going forward, bad quarter. Matter of fact, Nike yesterday, the earnings were fine, and they kind of started talking about it, and the stock's down 7%. It's people's view of going forward. Are they just talking their stuff down? Are they sensing? I don't see how Nike can figure out how many shoes they're going to sell in Canada. I mean, I'd have trouble if they asked me that question if I was Nike and they go, hey, Tom, how's this going to affect me? I'd have trouble writing that paper, even though I have some experience, you know, from graduate school stuff on that kind of stuff. I think I'd have trouble writing that one, wouldn't you? People are somewhat concerned, and these are companies that have massive expenditures. They have massive amounts of people. You don't want to lay people off if you don't have to. You don't, because you probably trained them to be there in the first place, so it's a real loss of human capital. I think we're just kind of in a little bit of a morass here. Where are we? I mean, the market looks heavy.
Yeah, that's probably the easy way to put it, is it just feels heavy. The thing that's, I think part of what's driving this right now, from a macroeconomic perspective, I mean, if I just look at this, if I just play technical and analyst and look at the charts, and I do it on the S&P, for example, you know, on the SPX, on the cash, right? So I'm looking at the cash index, and then, you know, then I look at the NASDAQ.
Looking at the spider, basically.
Whether I do, you know, SPY or whether I do SPX, doesn't, I mean, you know, I'm looking at the same thing. I'm looking at what the ETF represents, right? You know, and then the Russell, you know, same thing with the RET. When the Russell has been, over the last, you know, 3 years or so, has been the terrible underperformer. All right, but the Russell is also, you know, the Russell's a much broader index.
But it also doesn't really have the big seven in there.
What I'm saying. Yeah, So what you're looking at a much more accurate, unconcentrated view of the general business climate in the United States. Okay, in the Russell, the NASDAQ and the S&P have the Mag 7, if you will. And being price-weighted indices, that tends to drive their, you know, what you see on the chart, right? So the Russell's just a different, it's designed differently.
Yeah, but also, the growth in NVIDIA or Microsoft in a year could be more than the entire revenue of the Russell. So,
well, I understand.
You can't toss those guys out, as much as I don't like,
But if I'm looking at the general health of the economy, and the general health of business, and you know, hey, that NVIDIA is, you know, has had this meteoric shot, or that Netflix has, that tells me a lot about NVIDIA, and it tells me a lot about Netflix. It doesn't tell me anything about the smaller public company that, you know, for example, trucks stuff to my grocery store. Right? It doesn't tell me anything about that. So it depends on what you're looking for. But what I found interesting about both the S&P and the NASDAQ...
Okay, can I interject one question here? You and I have talked
on
many occasions. I'd say that out of all the people on the show, the guys I talk about this most are between you and Russell. How the dichotomy of being able to finance your business in this world of fake interest rates... You still have, you know, I'm sure there is a person, they're not dumb. They still have absolute morons on TV that will say stuff like, if the Fed lowers their rates, everybody's credit card rate will go down. How can anybody be that stupid? I'm saying the difference between the way the person you finance, or the guy who delivers stuff to your place, his ability to finance growth versus these other guys that the government essentially has given them money for less than the inflation rate, which you talk about a lot, is night and day difference in a growth pattern. What do you suppose the average cost of finance is in the Russell versus those seven?
Oh, probably four times as high.
You know, without talking out of school at all.
I mean, without having the actual data, you asked me for a guess, so that's what you got.
Well, right. I mean, you know, it's funny when Nancy was talking last Monday, and I won't go into much more detail than she did because it's her business. She's talking about refinancing people in their houses that have a 3% mortgage.
Yeah.
And you might ask, wait,
why would you do something that stupid? Yeah. Right.
And and she talked about several people, and no names. I mean, she never gives me any detail, nor should she. She's a professional, and by the way, I don't want to hear it. People that are refinancing because of massive credit card debts,
right?
Not from you know going to Mexico and getting a massage with a happy ending. We're talking about people who have used their credit cards to finance their businesses.
They've been charging their groceries.
Well, mostly if your business finance goes under, then you're doing your groceries. But
I get that. Yeah. It's
but when you start talking about somebody with $150,000-$200,000 of credit card loans. Unless you went out and bought a big yacht, which maybe you did, mostly that's coming from a business.
Chief, I think I have related this story.
But I'm saying, so that person's paying 25, not 2.
I understand, which is why rolling it into the house appears to make sense, which otherwise would not.
Right.
But the thing is, I think I've related this story on the show before. Before I was running MCS as a as an internet company, Macro Computer Solutions did PCs and data wiring. All right, so bog standard, really nice, solid business, serving businesses all over the Chicagoland area with PCs and on-site service. You know, the stuff nobody wants to do, but is actually a very solid business and makes a decent amount of money. You want to put a new terminal in to your mini computer, your little VAX that you got sitting in the back room. Well, guess what? Somebody's got to run the cabling over there for that, right? That was us. So one of our customers was a really nice guy. He's a guy who was a friend of mine. We'd play golf once in a while, stuff like this. And he used us for his on-site computer stuff. Little manufacturing outfit over in Aurora. And very, profitable company. But like so many smaller firms, he had an operating line from the bank that was basically, it was a revolver that he, that basically ran through and this was just, the cost of this was just part of what was built into his structure, okay? The interest that had to be paid on this. Well, we got into a kind of soft patch in the late 80s and early 90s, and you probably remember, Chief, it wasn't formally a recession, but it was just a soft patch, right?
A lot of people I knew were in recession. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm just saying, right. But so you know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, it happened, right? And, and we saw it too. It wasn't anything that was going to destroy us, but it was there. Well, he gets a call from his bank, and they pulled his line.
Nothing changed on his end.
No warning.
Was this a result of the Dodd-Frank of the day, or was this just the bank did it?
I don't know. I don't think he ever figured out exactly what it was, because it wasn't like that they'd had a fall off in their business and their financials all of a sudden turned to crap. It wasn't anything like that. But all of a sudden, out of the middle of it, literally in 48 hours, he was out of business. He was done.
Well, they made him pay it.
They pulled the line, and he could not find anyone else that would re-extend it, and he didn't have the cash.
So they demanded payment, not just pulled. I thought for a second they stripped him of his ability to borrow more. You're saying
Chief, you really, if you ever. Boy, when I was running my company, we had every banker in the place in the city of Chicago was trying to get us to take operating lines, okay? And if you read those contracts very carefully, those are all callable.
Well,
every one of them is callable.
But I mean, right? But why would you do it? Did the bank go under? Bank go under?
No, as far as I know, they didn't fail. I mean, I was way more busy running a company, a little outfit that was doing PC service than I was paying attention to capital markets, right, at the time. But, I mean, that seared into my brain when that happened to this guy, because he had a very successful firm and, 20 employees, a whole factory floor out in the back, and, you know, and a half dozen people up in the front doing the accounting stuff and, you know, and all the answering the phone stuff like this. All of a sudden, gone. All right. And I'm like, oh my God. Well, all right. So,
Carl, when you get, again, I'm trying to expound on this a little bit, not interrupting. When you get, especially business quote from the government in ways that, unless you've been involved in this, they can essentially skew the business to people they want in many different ways. Now,
I understand that, and I don't know, you know, I won't go into exactly what he did because it'd be easy to figure out who he was. And I don't want to do that. I haven't talked to this guy in 30 years. He might be dead for all I know. I mean, you know, it's that long ago. But and he was older than me. So, I mean, that's plausible without getting into the, you know, oh, well, you know, something terrible happened. That, you know, hey, we all die eventually. The thing is, though, that what I'm seeing internally, when I look, I mean, if I look at the S&P and the NASDAQ, I have some stuff that some people on my forum and myself, I got a little squiggly lines on my charts on a broader index basis that kind of, if you look back at them over 20 years or so and you say, you know, if I just went into the indexes.
By the way, we just dropped 25 points in the spoo. We're down 42 now.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, you know, if I, I'm not quite sure what came out to cause that, but obviously that was some kind of news, right? I mean, you know, 8:30 is when numbers get released.
Fed's Goolsbee was talking about inflation. I wasn't listening. I can't imagine he said something like that.
That's probably what was.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when I look at this right now, for the last couple of weeks on a weekly chart, which has been if you just looked at this on a 20-year basis and, it's not something you could use to short, but if you're like, okay, if I just buy the index when this thing is on the positive side and I'm in cash when it's not, okay, that's all it is, you would miss almost all of the big drawdowns and you wouldn't get all of the gains because you wouldn't bottom tick anything, okay? But on the other hand, you'd get most of it, all right? And if you took that and you just ran that on a, you know, leaving tax considerations aside, you would be way ahead. All right.
Do you find when you do this the technical stuff? And I mean,
problem with back testing, Chief, is it works until it doesn't, and when it doesn't, it blows up in your face and destroys you.
Well, I'm asking for a reason because one of our original clients, he's dead for a while, but he was a World War II navigator, for God's sake. He took Joe Granville's original model. I think he did a. There's a candlestick, and then there's like four pretty much, and I'm not into this huge, but there's four real serious, Granville's one probably people mostly forgot about, technical analysis theories, right?
Right.
And this guy had a computer set up back in like 90, 91, Carl, with all this stuff on the same big screen. You can imagine what he had to pay for that in those days.
Oh, yeah.
And when all four of them would either show a buy or a sell, he put $250,000 in an account, which was a lot of money back in 1980 something.
Oh yeah.
And at the end of a year, he was pretty much break even. He wonders how come I'm not making any money. And he also was pretty good at math, so he started doing some regression analysis. He says he was always, virtually always right, always a big term, but was virtually always early.
The timing was off.
So he'd always get stopped. He'd get stopped out. And he said he ended up doing regression analysis on the moves.
Well, then you skew it, right.
But he said the weird part was these were all commodities. He said they were all different. Like the soybean, you know, this is 40-year-old memory, so careful with this. I wouldn't trade on this because I wouldn't. I think he said, like, pork bellies were a week. Corn was like a day. Soybeans was 2 days. They were all different, which is weird. And he goes, and it was pretty much impossible to put a delay on the S&P.
Right.
It was because it didn't act like the other ones. Right. And I don't know.
But anyway, the point of where I am is that right now, you know, if you asked me yesterday where we, you know, when we closed yesterday, and these are weekly charts, so of course, you know, what you're looking at on Thursday does not mean it's where you're going to be Friday afternoon, right?
Yep.
All right. But if you asked me yesterday, I would say if we were unch today, Friday, and I was going to talk about this in that context, coming on the show, because, of course, I didn't know what the futures were going to be this morning. If we were Unsh, this looks like a good place to take a decent-sized position in the Spiders on a with a relatively low risk, because if you're wrong and you get stopped out, it's not going to cost you much money.
You're playing a bounce.
Well, but the thing is that that bounce could be a 10 or 12%er.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, because if you go back to the trend line that's held for the last couple of years, good God, you know, you're trading up around 6150. All right. I mean, that is a, you know, from here, that's a nice little gain.
Oh, God,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, God love you if you catch, you know, you catch a, you know, 5,700 move to,
well,
you know, 50
point move in the Spider would be a good one.
that would be a really nice trade, right? So yeah, I mean, and I don't think this thing holds through, you know, say for example August, September, right, into the fall months. But for something to do for the next, you know, the next 2-3 months. Oh God, yeah, I would, you know, now what I, you know, right now where we are with the futures, you know, if we close here, that's negated, and no, I ain't doing it. But this is, it, I think the whipsaw kind of thing, and you're seeing this now. I mean, you know, we peaked about 3-4 weeks ago, and you know, and it's been a downhill ride since. Is that people are trying to figure out if what Trump is talking about doing and what he is doing so far, is it a stage show? Or is he actually going to force production back into the United States to cut off the, you know, cut off the expansion of the K? You know, you got these guys on the bubble screen talking about the K-shaped economy. The guys in the top 2% are making a fortune. The guys at the bottom are in the ditch, and they're,
which is absolutely true.
Which is the truth, right? But here's the thing: if Trump is going to be a successful president, problem with bubbles is that eventually they always find a pin and they pop. Figuring out exactly when it's going to happen is very hard. However, it always happens eventually. And we've been on the verge of just throw more money at the problem.
Well, you heard the Fed chairman tell you that's what they're going to do now. They're not going to care about the inflation at all now.
Yes, just throw more credit at the problem. Keep doing it. You have a 22% interest rate on your credit card, and by the way, if you miss a payment, it's 34. But you know, as long you have a $5,000 line, we'll make it 8. You know,
yeah.
and that kind of thing has been going on now for the last 10 years. So, that's a large part of why you get that K-shaped economic, you know, structure, if you will. The market is trying to figure out if Trump is going to take those legs of the K and squeeze them back together. So you take margins out of the large business sector when you do this. When you force production back into the United States, that happens. Margins come down because their cost of operation goes up. They have to pay, you know, we can't be buying lithium from China. You want to mine it, fine. It's going to be under U.S. ecological standards. By the way, that doubles the price.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Now, is that good or bad? Well, that depends on your perspective. If you're the you know, if you're Tesla making cars that have a whole crap ton of that stuff in it, it's bad. If you're the guy who doesn't have a job that could drive the loader or the huge truck or run the refining equipment that turns that ore into lithium, it's good because it's a job here in the United States instead of over in China, you know, from the Uyghurs that they pressed into service or whatever have you. So all of this, if that compression is real, and tariffs, by the way, are the way to do this, and tariffs are inflation, from an inflation perspective, they are exactly neutral mathematically. Now, that doesn't mean...
Okay, but now, tariff is a big word. That's your definition of tariff. That's not what these guys have been doing.
No.
Or threatening to do.
Well, no, actually it is, Chief, and the reason is this. The tariff imposes the cost in a point source place, okay?
Okay, I understand.
But the money that it generates, if it's paid, as opposed to people moving the production back to the United States...
You're assuming that these guys are going to take the high road and they're doing the same kind of calculations you are. Don't assume that.
I'm not making that assumption. I am looking at the mathematics of it. Mathematically,
but the mathematics of what you and I can discuss is making sense. What I'm seeing here, and you're looking at the technical stuff, and I wish I was better at that. I look at kind of the news flow, and because the news, for whatever reason, the last 10 years has been moving the market more than it always has moved the market. I traded through the Iraq War, and I mean, it's always moved the market. But again, when you're managing money for other people, you care about it more than your own. I mean, you really do if you're a regular person.
Sure.
We've been very reluctant. I mean, we've had the puts on, so even some stocks that are getting annihilated, we're not that bad off in. As a matter of fact, we're, you know, stocks down 50% and we're down 5%, that kind of thing. Still not up. But, you know, you say to yourself, why aren't you up? Well, what we would like to normally do is sell out-of-the-money calls against these positions.
Right.
But our concern, my brother's for sure, and mine too, is that since Trump has been involved, all it would take is one reversal. You know,
and we'd pop right back, and all of a sudden you get called away.
And we'd be chasing the damn things. You know, it would take us 6 months to catch up or something.
That depends on how fast it moves.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm saying sometimes you never catch up. But
you can get assigned.
Yeah.
We're
never going to get assigned because we roll them out. But
I'm talking about if you're selling covered.
Right.
Yes, you can get assigned. Well,
let's put it this way. Retail people can get assigned. People that know the industry aren't going to get assigned.
No, I get that. As long as you don't get something so violent, you can't get in front of it.
So we've been laying off on... But I really do believe, and my brother and I will probably have this discussion today, and you know, he might not agree with me, that's what brothers are for. I think the policies coming out of Washington, I think we're way too far down this road for one sentence to turn it all around.
Well, I think you're right, but here is the thing, is that what the market's trying to figure out is that if there is a let's take what I think he should do, and legally what he's obligated to do, which of course no president has done in the last 20 years. So, you know, I'm asking for Santa Claus to come, basically, right? All right, which is 8 U.S.C. 1324 says if you employ or harbor illegal immigrants, you get 10 years in the slammer.
Let's stick on the, if you don't mind, we'll talk about that. Let's stick on the tariff piece. But I mean, it's
all right. So, but the tariffs are a part of this, Chief.
Okay, but let me just lob this one out there to you. At some point, and you're the guy that are, if anybody's into more of the detail than me, it's you. I mean, when I see the president, you know, basically insulting the living bejesus out of the guy in Canada, who I thought was our friend, but I guess I was wrong. Someplace I'd love to see a piece of paper from these people, or three pages. He kept saying that we've got the worst deal, we've been getting screwed by Canada. Somewhere along the line, Carl, I think somebody needs to publish a piece of paper like you would, where I would say, here's 15 tariffs that Canada has on our stuff.
And here's 15 we have on theirs.
And we have on theirs. And, I mean, I know we've always had a tariff on their lumber coming in. That's something we do to them. I mean, maybe they have tariffs on eggs coming across the border. I don't know. Someplace, somewhere, you've got to give people, here's what I'm talking about and here's why. It's just not a load of BS of insulting people every word. Someplace, somewhere, we got to know what you're talking about. And I think,
Chief, I entirely agree with you on that, okay? What I'm pointing out here is that what the market is trying to figure out right now, and the reason we're seeing this, this manic depressive kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the market's bipolar at the moment, right? And the whole reason it's happening is because if, for example, Trump was to go after 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 in the medical system, if he was to go after 8 U.S.C. 1324, if he implements the tariffs as what I advocated for back when I wrote Leverage.
But your idea of the tariffs makes sense. You're trying to even the playing field with labor and with pollution and that kind of crap that shouldn't be happening.
I want the arbitrage. Right. You use them as a means
to get
the arbitrage.
They don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Well, but you can get, sometimes, even though your motives are crap, your outcomes get 75 or 80% of the right outcome anyway.
I don't disagree with that.
All right.
And but so if you land in the Oval Office tomorrow with this group of those guys and you start talking what you're telling us, they have no idea what you're talking about.
But they'd look at me like I had six heads.
Yeah.
And but the thing is this, is that what the market's trying to figure out is, are we going to go down that road, which is the right road, even if we stumble down it by accident, okay? And if that occurs, then the general economic set of conditions for the average Joe, not in the top 2% in America, but the average Joe who works a job, is going to improve substantially.
Don't disagree.
Not immediately, but it will. There will be an extremely sharp and nasty deflationary correction in front of it. All right? Now, that's going to hurt, and everyone's going to howl for about 6 months.
Well, not the people who never participated in the first place in the market going.
Well, I understand that because their general economic conditions improve, right?
I mean, yeah. We got a dash, but I want to lob one at you. Two, just a couple that I happen to know
about. But here's the thing, Chief. The important point is PEs come down by 50% if that happens.
Without a doubt. Well, and they're too high to begin with. And they're too high to begin with.
Well, but that's
yeah.
That's what the market's trying to figure out. Is that going to happen?
Right, but you just one quick one, then we'll dash. Hopefully, you'll make some money on these college games. whenever I go to the store now, if I look at some for like barbecue sauce, I look for the ones. One that doesn't have the
high fructose corn syrup, yeah.
And I look for one with sugar in it. And people now are buying Coca-Cola from Mexico, and it costs a lot more that has sugar in it.
Right.
But how many people here is Trump and his guys rail all day on tariffs? You know why we don't have sugar and stuff? We got huge tariffs on sugar.
Oh, I know. Well, yeah. And by the way, you know why that's there? Because we're protecting the sugar cane guys in South Florida.
Well, we're also the guys in Minnesota too,
that's the reason historically.
But it's not just tariffs; it's like 4 or 5 cents up to a certain level,
right?
And then it gets to be 16 cents.
Well, it's the same thing with Canada and lumber.
Yeah, I'm sure we have no. But if you would, he's not about to say. By the way, people in Canada are assholes. Because of all these tariffs, and he's not going to say, well, by the way, we've got tariffs on your lumber.
Chief, I know this.
Yeah.
But the thing, like I said, I'm not saying the guy is that the reason he's doing this and the way he's going about it, makes sense objectively, because I can't look at any of the stuff there.
You're hoping gets you to the right, the same place.
I'm saying if I get 80% of a solution, even if it's from a guy that's a complete jackass and has the wrong ideas, I'll take it.
I'm with you on that, too. But right? I still, last thought, maybe we'll talk about it on Tuesday. I actually did was part of an exam that wasn't Milton Friedman, it was somebody in high school. It had to do with tariffs on Mercedes-Benzes. That's why I always talk about it, because I actually wrote a paper on it.
Yeah.
I have no idea how I would research one now when the parts go back and forth two and three times. And, oh, by the way, the company's owned by people here. I don't even know how I could straighten that one out or even get my head around it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that right now with, like, the stuff that goes across Windsor.
Yeah.
And you know, why's the guy got the plant in Windsor when he could have it, you know, halfway between in the 10-mile run between where the steel plant is?
Well, they do. Well, part of it, though, is what we want to have happen. Canada doesn't have their own car.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
I get that, but the thing is that there's... You know, there are things that you look at, there are flows that you look at, and you say, this makes no sense unless it's an arbitrage game. That's the only context under which it makes sense. Therefore, it is. And oh, by the way, I don't understand how it's being done and why. But it is. And so to the extent that we take, and by the way, that is screwing some people here in the United States. Now, is it helping some other people? Well, of course it is.
Sure it is.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing it.
No man can do one thing, right?
Well, that's right. So the question becomes, and that's what the market's trying to figure out, is this going away to any extent at all? And if it is, then, you know, we are trading 40% above where we ought to be, and oh, God, does everyone fear that one?
Off the top of your head, we were way over here, but off the top of your head, and if you don't know the answer, I don't. What almost punitive tariffs that he's accusing Canada of doing to us, What are they at? Are they on dairy goods? Or are they on farm? I have no idea. Do you?
The biggest one is on dairy and other agricultural things. That's the one that he's all bent, that he's all cranked up about. And by the way, he's right on those too.
But I mean, every country, right or wrong, I mean, you and I can go through the economics of it. It probably doesn't make any sense. Every country, right or wrong, Canada does not want every dairy farmer up there, because we have all kinds of programs here. We got way more corn here, all kinds of stuff. Who knows what programs our government is helping dairy farmers with. Canada does not want their entire dairy industry going out of business, just like we don't want our entire lumber industry going out of business.
Well, I understand that, and by the way, they would.
I got to believe them. Who'd grow trees here when Canada's got nothing but trees?
Well, yeah,
a little bit, but they'd be what?
I think that's maybe going a little far.
Okay, they'd be 80% of the market.
But you're right in that there is absolutely a dislocation kind of event that comes there, and there is protectionism that every nation uses.
Right, and we're going to do it on steel because we want at least a steel planer. What if we got to build a ship, for God's sake?
We have protectionism. They have every nation has them. The question is, at what point does it become structurally part of your trade deficit? And the thing that everybody has to keep in mind is that, if you really mean it and you're not fooling around, the nation that has a trade deficit does not lose a trade war.
Well, all right, we'll kick it around Tuesdays. Kevin was gleeful about his bracket being pretty good. I didn't even do a bracket. I do so bad that I don't even try.
Well, I don't do one either. I look at it as kind of like, throwing crap at the wall. So,
well, S&P futures, we're now down 48, 49 now, by the way. NASDAQ futures down 209. So we've degraded dramatically here in the last half hour.
We're leaking a lot.
Yeah, yep. We'll talk about it on Monday. Ricky, nice job. I'll be back Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.